Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Dr. James Greenblatt's book, Finally Focused, is a manual that provides information and guidelines needed to treat your ADHD child or yourself, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. ADHD is not a behavior or a discipline problem, but a genetically driven neurological condition. Dr. James Greenblatt joins 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Welcome, Dr. Greenblatt.
Thank you. It's good to be part of your show. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks. I applaud you on your book, Finally Focused, The Breakthrough Natural Treatment Plan for ADHD that restores attention, minimizes hyperactivity, helps eliminate drug side effects. It was well written. It was clearly stated. It was very informative. What was the impetus for you in writing your book?
Well, I've been practicing child psychiatry for over 30 years now, and always been interested and respectful of parents looking for natural alternative to medicines. And we've been doing this work for many, many years, and I decided to write the book this past year because there was substantial research, scientific research, to support all the recommendations that we discussed. 30 years ago, we knew some of these nutrients were good for you. We knew some of these diets and high sugar and sodas were not. But we didn't have the research.
Mm-hmm.
So once the research established it, it just made it much easier for me to talk to colleagues and parents on trying to help them understand ADHD.
Share the significance of the title.
Well, I think
it's pretty,
finally focused ADHD, as many individuals know, affects attention, but it also affects so many other aspects of one's life, kind of follow through, procrastination, persistence of effort, and most of the kids, the teens, even the adults. It's this chronic sense of not living up to expectations. And so Finally Focused is just kind of a model to help people look at a integrative nutritional model, either with or without medication.
Who is the book written for? What audience are you trying to tap into? Because I saw it really applying to for parents, for kids, for adults. So I wanted to get a real handle on exactly who you were targeting.
Yeah, I mean, I think the initial attempt was for parents who get frustrated going to doctors and placed on many medications without the information here. But I have many pediatricians.
Mm-hmm.
That have told me that they keep the book on their desk and they use it as a reference. And many teenagers really find it helpful because their parents might be yelling at them to eat something or take a vitamin, but it's much better when they can read it for themselves.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of books. Many authors have written about ADD or ADHD. Share with us what actually distinguishes your book from others, and it was truly very informative. I must add that again.
Great. Good question. I mean, I think, one, we took all updated research, so it's science. It's not just based on one person's theory. And we set it up to make it very easy to understand. The concept being every child or adult with ADHD is different. The neurochemistry is different. So we set up a plan called the plus-minus plan, help people understand that some individuals are going to need to add things to their diet, like taking certain vitamins, mm-hmm. or need more support and help, and other individuals are going to need to remove things, either excess sugar or environmental challenges or food allergies. So it's a very simple roadmap helping people understand some of the most important nutrients that we have found and the research supported helpful to sustain and help someone focus.
For the listening audience, how do you define ADHD?
I think, we probably use the term often, but mm-hmm. as a physician, as a psychiatrist, you know, I see ADHD as a medical disorder, as you said in the introduction. And so there are kind of diagnostic criteria. Individuals that have poor impulse control, inattention, overactivity are the hallmarks. And then the other term that I use often is the persistence of effort, people that can't follow through, kids that get bored, adults that get bored all the time. And I think what's confusing is you don't have to have all of the above. There are some individuals that have just attention problems, and they're not hyperactive, particularly mm-hmm. females. And so, but it is some combination of that poor impulse control, overactivity, and inattention that really impairs aspects of their life, school, relationships, and work. And these are the areas that we try to address.
Talk somewhat about the etiology of ADHD. And I know there are a number of factors that really influence and contribute to the disorder.
Sure. I mean, I think that the first we have to say is genetics. So clearly, as individuals in your family, higher incidence of ADHD. It doesn't mean the individual parent is impaired or needs to take medicine, but they are prone to those symptoms of inattention, hyperactivity, mm-hmm. activity. And then what we describe in the book is some of the other causes that sometimes can be treated. So, you know, one of the ones we've researched for years is environmental, like so the pesticides. Farm workers or people exposed to high pesticides have much higher incidence of ADHD. Things like lead, which is mm-hmm. a serious problem in our drinking water, recent cases mm-hmm. from Flint, Michigan to New Jersey, lead, copper in our drinking water as well. And then we go through a whole list in the book of nutritional deficiencies, magnesium, zinc, that also either contribute or exacerbate some of the underlying mm-hmm. symptoms of ADHD.
Okay. I really appreciate how the chapters were set up in your book. The step-by-step kind of action plan was really helpful. Do you feel, in looking at ADHD, do you feel that many children are misdiagnosed?
I think for years, women and girls were misdiagnosed because they weren't hyperactive, mm-hmm. that they were inattentive and not being noticed in the classroom in elementary school. So they were kind of lost. There's a high incidence of eating disorders in some of our female ADHD. I think now people are diagnosed better, but the backlash is that the very kind of high use of amphetamines and pharmaceuticals as the only treatment for ADHD.
What role does society play, in your opinion, concerning the incidence of ADHD? And I'll tell you what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about maybe not having realistic expectations. Let's say take a 5 or 6 or 7 year old boys who are particularly active, you know, into everything, inquisitive, where society might say, or the teacher may find that this particular boy is demanding. Does society influence the incidence of ADHD and the misdiagnosis of it? That's, you know, that's the direction I'm going.
Sure. I mean, I think that our school systems aren't really tolerant of different learning styles. Our ADHD kids are usually passionate, excited, but they can't often sit in a classroom for 90 minutes. So certainly some of our longer classrooms might contribute to the symptoms being a problem. Certainly our screen time and putting these young children, we see, you know, the infants in the restaurants on the iPads. So our attention span is trained at a very early age to be kind of short, looking for the next quick fix for our brains. And that clearly affects development, our brain developing 18, 20 years. But I think some of the screen time effects, certainly things like sleep deprivation can affect the exacerbation of symptoms. And then some of the parental expectations of if you don't get an A, you know, you're doing something wrong. And then looking and trying to get their child diagnosed with ADHD so they can take medication. So there are many, many factors.
I know often we have seen just the factor of immaturity being an influential factor as far as the diagnosis is concerned. We're going to take a brief break, but I wanted to prepare you because when we come back, I want to know if you will share what a thorough diagnosis looks like for parents who are listening. How is a child with ADHD diagnosed? It's not just the teacher saying, oh, he won't sit still or he has problems. What do we go through in diagnosing an ADHD child? You're tuned into 411 Teen. This hour, I'm talking with Dr. James Greenblatt. He is the author of Finally Focused. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Dr. James Greenblatt joins 411 Teen this hour. He is an integrative psychiatrist. Dr. Greenblatt, what does a thorough diagnosis of ADHD involve?
Well, I think it's really important that kids and parents understand there's no one test for ADHD. So you can't do a brain scan or a blood test. People have done what's called educational testing and neuropsychological testing to measure attention span and impulsivity, but they're not always accurate because in different environments, the symptoms can change. One-on-one with the tester, some kids will do very well, but in a classroom, unstructured, they don't. So the diagnosis of ADHD is really a clinical assessment by a trained professional, either a psychiatrist or a psychologist, sometimes neurologists do it. And in this assessment, we're looking at this the symptoms of, that we talked about, inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity. And they need to be present for at least 6 months. And they need to be across different settings, not just school, school and home. And so it's a clinical diagnosis based on an extensive history from parents and teachers, and a clinical interview with the child.
I'm so glad that you said it needs to be across all disciplines, because sometimes a child may exhibit these symptoms in school, but when he or she gets out of school, they don't have those symptoms at all. So it may be something that's going on in the classroom that is causing the child to exhibit these symptoms. So I appreciate that. Or if you have a child who's inattentive and hyperactive at home, but they get to school and they're fine. And when they're out in the community, in the neighborhood, they're fine. So that's really important. And I appreciate you sharing that. You talked about your plus minus plan. And I wanted to ask you to elaborate a little bit more so that parents and those listening have an idea of exactly how it works. For example, I don't know, magnesium was one of the nutrients that you talked about. How would that apply?
Well, I think that we started the book with the discussion of magnesium, which is a mineral that the body needs, the brain needs. It's used in hundreds of enzymes in the body. And it's probably the most common nutritional deficiency that we see in children with ADHD. So it's called one of the plus chapters, and we describe magnesium as how it's essential for brain function. Some of the deficiency symptoms are insomnia, irritability, constipation, and anxiety. And there are some tests we can do to look for magnesium, but it's probably the one nutrient that I recommend all kids with ADHD take. And then we talk about some of the dosages and how to use it. And it's you know, easy for parents to pick up at a health food store and easy to treat. So that's one of the pluses. And one of the minuses that we talk about are things like the heavy metals. I mentioned lead and copper, which are just in our water supplies, and we know that they contribute to behavior and learning problems. Taking a medication doesn't treat the problem, so we need to address the lead or the copper, and sometimes we can use supplements to do that.
Let's say I'm a parent, and I have an ADHD child that is being diagnosed appropriately, and have read your book and really would like to institute some of the recommendations that you have made. Do I need to go to a physician first or a psychiatrist first before I initiate these? I mean, for example, magnesium. I know it's called the miracle drug, but how do I determine, do I just put my child on this, or how do I determine that this is what is necessary?
Well, the book was written for parents and patients and adolescents to read and to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's in a specific order. So to get something out of it, and the book's been out for a number of years now, and we've talked to you know, hundreds of parents and doctors, and there are many individuals who are able to benefit tremendously from taking some of the supplements listed and the dosages listed. So it's very clear and organized. There's
yes.
going to be a subset of individuals that we've been treating now for 30 years where we can more accurately recommend a nutritional plan if we do some testing. And that testing, you know, would be done through your physician's office, a pediatrician, or a child psychiatrist. So I'd say over 50% of patients are going to be able to read the book and get some benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then others are going to be able to just either bring the book or find someone who understands integrative medicine to do some of the simple tests to really fine-tune some of the nutritional recommendations.
Yeah, and the recommendations are really very, I found to be very easy to institute. I mean, like you talk about blueberries, giving kids blueberries. I mean, that would be something that I think most of them would enjoy. It's not taking any kind of medication per se. It's real positive, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, and it's something that they would like. So I like how that was done. But how do you feel about pharmaceuticals? Are they a recommended intervention? And if so, when and why and where?
Yes, I think, you know, I call myself an integrative psychiatrist, so I do use medications when necessary. I think I've never in the past 20 years used medicines on children under 6 or 7. It's a growing concern where we have 4-year-olds on amphetamines. Usually we can find a nutritional intervention. My approach to parents, and I usually have one parent in the room saying, I don't want my kids on medicine. The other parent saying, you've got to put them on medicine. And I'm just asking the parents, can I have 4 months to try to address, see if there's other things going on, to address this nutritionally? And if the child is still struggling in school or socially, not working up to their potential, then medicine is an alternative, and it's something that can be helpful. But I really think a nutritional approach is very important as a place to start, because we often see some improvement, and sometimes we'll see that there won't be a need for medication.
And it seems like in the States, we go to medication before we try some of these alternative, less invasive, I would say, types of treatment.
Well, it's pretty astounding, actually, the incidence of medication use around the world. So the United States does have the highest rate of medication. Other countries, in France and European countries, they still use medication, but it's much less.
Mm-hmm.
So I think here we are much quicker to utilize medication.
Are we quicker to diagnose? I mean, where do we stand compared to other industrialized countries as far as the incidence of ADHD?
Well, I think that, we've seen ADHD, across all developing, countries.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's clearly the medicine use is pretty dramatic in terms of variations in different countries. But the incident rate, if we look carefully, certainly at Western countries, that it's similar. The diagnosis is not as dramatically different as the treatment, the quicker treatment with medications.
One thing that historically has always occurred, and I think that your book addresses this in many ways, is that there was a clear period as far as the development of ADHD that the parents really felt like they were the cause. They were responsible for their child's disorder. Of course, this is a fallacy, and I wanted you to dispel that, because whenever you have a child that may have any type of disorder or issue, the parents are the first to feel responsible. What did I do, wrong? What can we do about it? So talk about the parents' role here.
Yeah, we discussed parenting at the end of the book, the last chapter, but in some ways, as you're describing, it is the most important. And some of the issues, one, appreciating and understanding your child as a unique individual, and two, that, parenting is not the problem. If we see this as a kind of medical, neurobiological illness, then parenting is not the cause. And as you read 100 parenting books, everyone telling you to do something different, the only one that consistently works is positive feedback and listening and respect and a kind of appreciating the strength of the child with ADHD and kind of minimizing the weaknesses. If they can't sit in a classroom for 90 minutes, they should not be in a classroom for 90 minutes to make them feel bad. So we work with parents a lot helping them provide one, that positive feedback, but more important, kind of understanding and listening to their kids.
As far as the diet is concerned, I think you have a chapter titled Balanced Behavior, Balanced Nutrients. And you've identified some of the nutrients that are significant, the magnesium, the zinc, the copper. But you talked about the gut and the influence that what's going on in the gut plays. Would you elaborate on that for the listening audience? Because often I've seen ADHD children seem to have gastrointestinal issues.
Very, very common. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple issues around the gut or the GI tract. And one thing to think about is if your child had lots of antibiotics for ear infections as a kid, then sometimes we do see what's called yeast overgrowth. So these are kids that might have a distended stomach and chronic GI problems. And oftentimes there might be yeast infections on the skin, or we can detect it with some testing. There's also, there's so much out there now about our gut bacteria, that we have 4 to 5 pounds of bacteria on our body, and this bacteria in our gut produces vitamins and helps protect and regulate our immune system. And if it's in balance, or there's some what we call dysbiosis, then there are times we can detect some abnormal chemicals that is produced in the gut that can contribute to ADHD. Again, something that's hard to do on your own, you need a test, but it's very simple to go and get a probiotic, a good bacteria, and using that a couple times a day can be helpful for some of the kids, particularly what you described, those with GI problems.
The step-by-step action plan that you have at the end of each chapter delivers a lot of information, a lot of needed information. Share with us the who, what, why of this step-by-step action plan, that it delivers all of this valuable information for those who are following your prescription in the book.
Yeah, one of the things that we found, as you said, there are hundreds of books written about ADHD, and they just, say, okay, you should take zinc or you should exercise more. But it's not really in a very logical fashion that parents or doctors could just follow. So after each of the chapters, we try to institute a very simple step-by-step guide, which is, step one, do this test, or step two, go to the health food store. So it's a very organized plan that can be followed. And the way we're able to organize the book is the most important chapters at the beginning, like the magnesium, and then we get to some of the nutrients and some of the tests that might be less common.
I think that's very helpful. I'm sure that you've gotten feedback on it being helpful.
Yes, I think this other book that I've written, we didn't make it as clear.
Uh-huh.
We really have to dissect it here. I think parents can take the action plan and really implement the changes for their children. And we've been hearing that over the past year, so it's good to hear.
Well, the diet in the book appears to be a key as far as addressing ADHD. That chapter, there was a chapter about good foods, and I'm thinking the good foods that may be bad for your children. That's what it was. And I'm thinking about now dairy products and wheat, gluten, that we now is the craze, and folks are saying they can't tolerate gluten. Have you found that to be very effective?
Well, I'm not one, as a child psychiatrist, to tell kids or parents that everybody should stop dairy or wheat or gluten because, one, it's very challenging, and two, not everyone needs to do it. But the particular chapter we discuss are individuals that might have a problem. One, celiac disease is a disorder where you can't tolerate gluten, and you have a lot of nutritional deficiencies because of celiac disease. And then there's also, for some individuals, they don't digest gluten and dairy completely, so they get these abnormally digested proteins that can cause inattention. So we write about that. So I'm not a proponent to tell every parent stop dairy and wheat because many kids, it's not going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be a subset of kids where their life really can change with eliminating these foods that might be causing problems for them.
Okay. Dr. James Greenblatt has developed a breakthrough natural treatment plan for ADHD that restores attention, minimizes hyperactivity, and helps eliminate drug side effects. He's been sharing this hour some of the key components of this of a successful protocol for working with individuals with ADHD. Diet is a major component. I recommend that if you're interested, you get the book, Finally Focused. We're going to take a break, but we'll come back and continue to discuss this topic with Dr. Greenblatt.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Dr. James Greenblatt has seen thousands of children and adults struggling with the symptoms of ADHD, hyperactivity, inattentiveness, impulsivity, and often irritability and combativeness. He tailors remedies to his patients' individual needs, detecting and treating the underlying causes of the disorder. We've talked about your book, Dr. Greenblatt. Where can one purchase the book?
The book is available at most bookstores and certainly online at Amazon.com. Our website is my name, James Greenblatt, MD, .com. So it's readily available, and
you emphasize in the book, though, that anyone who picks it up, if they're going to follow this plan, must follow it in the exact order. Why is this so important?
Well, it's critical because if someone has like a magnesium deficiency, it's important that it is addressed early. Or some of the early chapters, we talked about the copper and the lead. I say things like diet to the end because, many of these kids are eating a very high refined sugar diet, the sugar-sweetened beverages. The more sodas the kids drink, the higher risk of ADHD. So we know all those things affect ADHD. But if we have some of these major nutritional deficiencies, and changing the diet is not going to make a difference in their attention or behavior. So it's an organized approach trying to pick the most important in an order that's going to give the kids the most help.
Give me some guidelines for parents who decide to utilize this book and follow your plan. Basically, how long does it take before these remedies are effective? And I know each child is different and their metabolism, but is there some kind of general, prescription or idea of when should they maybe pursue? If they're doing it and they're finding that they're not making any inroads, when do they determine? When is that determined?
Well, I think, we usually use the term 3 or 4 months. And again, as a parent, you're reading the information, you're trying nutritional supplements. I think, and that's fine for those first 3 months. I think there's another subset of individuals working with an integrative a physician, a naturopath, or a child psychiatrist who understands this, that with some simple test, that you really will be able to target some of these nutritional deficiencies to make a dent in maybe eliminating medicine. So some parents are going to find that their pediatrician or a doctor can be helpful in implementing the plan. So I would do about 3 months, 4 months of reading and following the plan. If there's not significant improvement, usually some improvement, if it's not significant enough, then work with your doctor about doing some of the tests that we recommend in the book.
You talk about omega-3, and so often we hear, you know, eat fish, that fish oil, that feeds the brain. So you're strengthening brain cells, weakening ADHD. Elaborate on that, please.
Sure. I mean, I think the research has been mixed when you take, 100 kids and you do a research study. And like everything else, that if we look at an individual, particularly we often do testing to see if you're deficient in omega-3, that for some individuals with ADHD, that omega-3 supplementation is really critical. And, every brain cell is enveloped in these omega-3s. 60% of the brain is fat. Mm-hmm. So they're really important. And we like to recommend, taking omega-3s, particularly there's a subset of kids that don't eat any fish and they don't have any access to omega-3s in their diet. And they're called essential fatty acids because your body can't make it. You need to get it from your diet, and the brain doesn't function well without adequate omega-3s from either fish oil or just eating fish.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. What impact does protein have on the sugar problem? And sugar is really a problem, I would think, for ADHD kids, because sugar seems to be in everything. And you hear if you give a kid too much sugar, it hypes them up. If they're already hyped up and you're giving them more sugar, they'll be bouncing off the walls. So I know that just adding protein counteracts the sugar. How does that work?
Well, I think, protein is probably one of the most important dietary recommendations that we make, because if you're all the chemicals in your brain, the neurotransmitters, are all made from the digestion of protein. So mm-hmm. you need adequate protein during development to make the neurotransmitters so you can pay attention. And if a diet is very high in the sugar sweetened beverages or just the refined carbohydrates, the sugar, then you're going to get full and not eat adequate protein. So we're really trying to minimize as much as we can the very concentrated sugar-sweetened beverages and trying to add protein to every meal. There was one study where the kids did not pay attention well if they just had sugar, but if they had the same amount of sugar with protein, that the attention was not adversely affected.
Well, I know ADHD brains really use less sugar or less glucose, I guess I should say. Is that correct?
Well, there's been some research about the ability to regulate blood sugar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And our kids with ADHD, sometimes the blood sugar gets low. Our bodies should be able to regulate it so it stays even. And there were some studies where the ADHD kids, their blood sugar dips a little too low, and guess what happens when your blood sugar gets a little too low? You're a little more irritable and impulsive, hyperactive.
Do you have suggestions as to how parents can slowly eliminate or at least significantly decrease sugar in their ADHD child's diet? Because sugar is in so many things that we just aren't even aware of it. I mean, I know we know about the soft drinks and the juices. Sometimes folks say, well, we don't drink soda. But you have the juice there, and the juice is just as bad. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think sometimes just eliminating the big ones, which sodas and you're right, the sweetened beverages, and they're covered in lots of different names, is the most important. And then, you know, I think, again, as a child psychiatrist, I'm not going to deprive a child of a cookie or dessert or sweet. And so we try to work with parents as much as we can about understanding maybe more complex sugars like honey, maple syrup, when they can, or if they're making cookies at home. But it's just really reading the label and understanding. And some of the yogurts now that people are buying are, you know, almost as much sugar as a Coke to get the kids to eat them. So yes. It's really trying to understand the labels and minimize, if not eliminate, the concentrated sugar-sweetened beverages, as you said, not just those.
Do you have an idea of the cost that is involved in incorporating your remedies and your prescriptions for those parents who may be interested and they think that it may be prohibitive and they can't manage that? Because I think my impression is that it should be relatively easy and the cost should be low from the way I read it.
Yeah, I mean, if we start in the back we talk about things like sleep, how important sleep is, and exercise, and mindfulness. I mean, it's amazing to me, as I started reading the research and working with ADHD, hyperactive kids, and teaching them mindfulness, that it actually focused their attention in the martial arts. So there are lots of very, very low-cost things, adding protein. And the nutritional supplements that are mentioned here in the book are relatively inexpensive. I mean, magnesium, zinc, the omega-3s, the probiotics, they're not that expensive. And I think most individuals would be able to incorporate that into their, monthly budget. It's truly amazing to me that our food stamp policy that you can get junk food, but you cannot use, the government will not allow you to get a nutritional supplement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have not addressed sleep like I would like us to, because I think that parents, for example, we were just talking about this on another program, here in Florida, we had a young girl, she was 6 years old, who was arrested and handcuffed at school. This was in Orlando by the resource officer. And she, I guess, was doing some acting out or kicked someone. But her grandmother, who was her custodian, had mentioned that she did not get enough sleep that night. She has problems with sleeping and wanted to know if you would give us a prescription for good sleep. And by that, I'm talking about all of these electronic gadgets that may be in the room that don't help. Having a dark room, but I'll have you elaborate on it than I, because sleep seems to be so very important. And then there are natural products that one can use to enhance sleep. So would you address those for us?
Sure. I think sleep is just being appreciated, or sleep deprivation, as a major problem with our youth, both anxiety, depression, ADHD, and there's now new studies looking at suicide risk due to sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation changes the chemistry of the body, producing inflammation. So it really, really is important. The difference with the ADHD kids is oftentimes what we've talked a lot about, a deficiency of magnesium, is what is contributing to the sleep problem. They can't fall asleep. Their mind is too fast. That is a magnesium problem. So there are sleep hygiene protocols that we talk about. which is, you know, trying to minimize the screen time before bed, getting into a routine, dark, not a lot of light, and these screen lights, and having a routine. And then there are kind of the nutritional interventions, and magnesium being the most important for ADHD, but melatonin has also been shown to be very helpful for kids with ADHD in supporting sleep. Oftentimes it's only needed for a couple of weeks or a month just to kind of readjust the clock, but once individuals are on a better sleep schedule, they often can stop the melatonin.
And in addition, you don't want to feed a child. You want to avoid caffeine. I talked with a mother who said that she would give her daughter warm milk and tea. Well, tea does have caffeine in it, and that is something that parents need to be aware of.
Yes, I think, and all the a lot of the energy drinks, a lot of these kids are taken, you know, late at night or on the way home from school, and that can affect them for many, many hours. So caffeine is a problem in coffee, energy drinks, and certainly tea.
Yeah, and because sleep plays a big role in creating a number of the ADHD symptoms, can you talk about or address some of the disorders that we see in sleep? And like sleepwalking, snoring, these disorders, and how parents may address them?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a whole host of, as you just said, sleep disorders. So sleep apnea, some of these kids that snore, doesn't always have to do with weight and overweight, but sometimes it does. The sleep apnea can contribute to inattention and ADHD problems, and that is not uncommon. There's also, restless leg syndrome that's usually due to deficiency of iron, not uncommon. And these are individuals that have a real hard time falling asleep because their legs are very restless and very uncomfortable.
Now, we've talked about the book as if it's just for kids. But these interventions and these remedies can be applied to adults, too. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that the ADHD in kids are at least picked up by the school system. They're treated more aggressively. What's happening in our young adults, certainly these kids that don't do as well in high school or college, they struggle for a long time. They don't get help. Mm-hmm. I just know too many of them that are really, really smart that don't make it through college because of the untreated ADHD. And then the statistics of things like more frequent car accidents, more frequent divorces, more frequent job loss, and marital problems are just statistically more significant in ADHD adults.
Well, in this last minute, and I know we touched on it a little bit, at the end of your book, you talk about mindfulness. What does mindfulness involve? Just very briefly, we've only got a minute.
Well, it really doesn't involve anything that the child doesn't want it to do. So it's not sitting there and meditating.
Uh-huh.
For ADHD kids, we're doing mindful walking. So it's just trying to help them be mindful or appreciative of everything around them so they can get out of their thought processes and thinking about the dirt under them, the grass, their shoes, everything that's in front of them or behind them, not what's in their head. And that has shown to increase attention.
Yeah, and breathing and meditation also was mentioned there. But I'll just have to have you come back so we can elaborate some more on some of these interventions. Again, Dr. Greenblatt, thank you very much. Appreciate you sharing your expertise and your knowledge with 411 Teen. Dr. Greenblatt is the author of Finally Focused, a manual providing natural medical methods treating ADHD. To my listening audience, thank you for your ear. Much appreciation. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.